By yours truly, Nicole Auerbach, and I am thrilled to be joined this week by my friend and colleague over at Fox Sports, Mark Titus, and we're going to talk some hoops. We're going to break down everything heading into the Sweet 16. Mark, hello.
Hello, Nicole. This is you wasted no time as the clock hit zero on Oral Roberts, Ohio State, texted me like, hey, you want to come on the show this week and talk about everything that happened this weekend? And
well,
I see where this is going. And
to be fair, the most ruthless text I sent you was after Ohio State lost to Michigan.
Yes.
And that was like right when zero hit.
Right. Yeah.
And you waited 24 hours.
I waited 24 full hours. I saw it immediately and I waited 24 full hours because I was like, I'm not giving you the satisfaction of this. And and it's probably not a coincidence that Michigan's the one Big Ten team left in this thing. And I don't know, whatever. I'm not bitter about it. I'm definitely not mad. I'm definitely just enjoying the tournament.
That's exactly what people who are not bitter say. So before we get into kind of the overall storylines, I tweeted about this, but I do need some confirmation from the other side of the rivalry. Big Ten fans would never pull for like the Big Ten, right?
Yeah, this has been a weird thing because, this happens every tournament where conference pride really rears its ugly head. And I've always hated conference pride, but also I grew up obsessed with Big Ten basketball and I grew up in a Big Ten family my mom went to Purdue. My dad went to IU and I went to Ohio State. So like there was a sense of Big Ten pride in our family, but we always cheered for just like our own individual schools. But then as more time passes and it's been so long since the Big Ten as a conference has won a national title, I started to like become the thing I hated, which is like a Big Ten guy where I'm like, you know what? To hell with it. I want one of these Big Ten schools. And it's not just that we don't win national titles, Nicole, as you know, it's that we get to the title game and lose. And this has happened to like countless programs in the conference. So if you put a gun to my head, I would probably say, no, I'm not cheering for Michigan. But I've also said a million times, like, I need the Big Ten to win a title. But then I guess when you go down each individual school, you're like, all right, so you need the Big Ten to win a title. If it's not Ohio State, would you be cool with Wisconsin winning? And I'm like, absolutely not. What about Michigan? I'm like, no. And you just got to go down the list. And I'm like, all right, so I guess I don't actually want the Big Ten to win a title. I just want Ohio State to win one.
Okay, so which schools did you decide were acceptable?
In a weird way, I think I could be okay with Michigan because I feel like they've quote unquote earned it. Like it's actually a good program. I decided I'd be like really upset if like Iowa this year won it. You know, like they haven't, in my mind, they haven't paid their dues, which is to say they haven't lost a national championship game recently, like Ohio State and Michigan and Michigan State, some of the others. So I think I would be okay with Michigan State. I would be probably okay with Michigan. But again, ask me if Michigan goes on a run and they're in the title game. We'll see how I feel then. I don't think I would be okay with Wisconsin, though. Wisconsin went to two Final Fours. They have earned it. If Wisconsin won, I would probably be upset about it. I don't know. It's hard to say. You gotta wait till you're in the moment and then you decide who you're cheering for, you know?
Okay, so we will check back with you when Michigan does make the championship game and see how you feel about this. But in the meantime, we do have the Sweet 16, and it is a wild Sweet 16 because I think we've already surpassed the amount of upsets record in a tournament. I think that every game that's going to be played on one of the days is like a totally different seed number. Oral Roberts is in the Sweet 16. Mm-hmm. Everyone's kind of seems to be a little bit polarized on this, like whether this amount of upsets is good or bad for the tournament. I personally like it. I love it. We already knew we weren't going to have a lot of the blue bloods this year, so I feel like it's adding something. But where do you stand on that? Like good, bad, in the middle?
I guess it depends on each tournament because traditionally I've been, I would never say it's bad for the tournament. I think where people, because that's probably far too cynical of a point of view. I would say that that point of view is more like you've watched these teams all season. You kind of have an idea of who the best teams are. and you want to see those matchups. Like, I'm being honest, like Loyola and Oregon State very much deserve to play each other, and I'm excited for that game, and I think it's going to be a great game. When the bracket came out, I was licking my lips about Illinois versus Oklahoma State. That's what I want. I was like, that is going to be an insane matchup. Io versus Cade. This is in the Sweet 16. And so I think that's where that sentiment comes from, is like you kind of circled those games as like, this would be an awesome matchup. And when you don't get it, you feel a little disappointed. And then people, you know, if you're a fan of Loyola or Oregon State, you're like, no, hang on a second. Why do you hate my team? And I don't think it's that. But there's also like the part of if the more Cinderella runs you have, the more it sort of devalues the regular season, which I don't care. Like, whatever. The March Madness is the greatest event on earth. So like, I'm not trying to say we should do something different with it, but there is kind of that, as a guy who covers it all season, you're like, what the hell was the point of following Illinois all season and having so all these thoughts about Illinois? And I was watching their ups and their downs, and they'd come back around, and like all of that led to just getting completely dominated by Loyola for 40 minutes. That's it. That's the end of it. What the heck? So I think there's a lot of that too. Like, we're people who say like, this is quote unquote bad for the tournament. It's more of like, I can't believe I just wasted my entire year watching Illinois and Iowa and Ohio State and all these other schools that we were certain were going to be contenders. West Virginia is another one that I believe. Texas. Oh my God. Texas. I had Texas in my Final Four because I was off on Texas all year when Texas was struggling. I kept saying I was buying high and selling low on Texas, and I could never quite figure out whether they were peaking or not. And as soon as I would buy in on them, they would start to suck. And as soon as they, you know, I'd be like, I'm done with them. They'd go on a winning streak. So I finally talked myself into it after the Big 12 tournament. They lose to Abilene Christian. And I think that's where that sentiment comes from. It's like, what the hell is the point of the entire season watching these games if it's all just going to be a crapshoot in March? And the point is that the regular season's fun too, and there are trophies on the line for that too. And that's college sports, and that's why we love it. So,
well, I was going to say, it also is nice when people who think they're experts on things get taken down a notch. So I appreciate that part.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that it's fun. I think that usually what happens is, you know, kind of resets a little bit. Like we by the Elite Eight, it's the teams that were better throughout the year. Like, I think people would have been shocked if Gonzaga was one of these teams that got, you know, upset. But it is interesting. And I've heard a number of different theories about maybe why there are so many this year. And let's go through them, because I love weird theories. Okay. So one, without travel, so you don't have like the top seeds are normally a little bit protected. They're really close to home, home court advantages, all those things. Some of these lower seeds would have been the teams that would have been like shipped all the way across the country potentially, or moved around a lot. I've heard some theories that, like, because we've obviously got four out of the 16 teams are from the Pac-12 plus Gonzaga. Maybe the fact that they've been in Indy for like a full week, kind of like maybe the time difference, body clock stuff isn't there. Trying to think of other potential theories that I've been hearing. Maybe just like, you know, it was such a disjointed regular season that who knows.
That was going to be, I think that's my theory. I don't think there's any one, but I think the one that I would put the most stock in is that a lot of the teams are just misseeded. And that's always something that gets talked about every tournament, is that, you know, an 11 seed goes to the Final Four. It's like, how the hell was this team an 11 seed? And it's like, well, because they lost a lot of games. That's how. This doesn't erase the regular season. But for this particular tournament, given just how messy the non-conference schedules were, given how often games were canceled and moved, and it's hard to remember like which teams were in COVID pauses and which players were out at which times and all that kind of stuff. I think that could be as likely an explanation as anything. I mean, Oregon is a team that if Oregon is fully healthy and fully firing on all cylinders all season, we have a normal season of Oregon basketball. There's no way in hell Oregon's a seven seed. There's not. I mean, that's what stands out to me, is that sure, Oral Roberts upsets Ohio State. You know, Abilene Christian beats Texas. But there have been a handful of upsets, like Loyola, upsets in quotes, like Loyola over Illinois or Oregon over Iowa, where it didn't feel like an upset at all. It was like, that team was the better team for 40 minutes. And if you play that game again tomorrow, they're going to win again. And to me, that says that maybe Loyola isn't an eight seed. Maybe Loyola should have had a better seed. But that's probably a factor. You know, if you're someone who loves mid-majors, you'd say that's because there's mid-majors get no respect. If you're, you know, maybe on the other side of it, you'd say, well, we just didn't have enough data this year. There just wasn't there weren't enough games. There weren't, it was just a weird year trying to suss through it all. And that's kind of, I don't know, that's probably my most likely explanation.
No, I think that's probably it. I think too, you have, even with the mid-majors, like I agree that it is a talking point about not getting enough respect, but also this happens in normal years too, because of the data points, right? Like they don't have as many, you know, quad one opportunities, mm-hmm. X, Y, and Z. So I feel like sometimes, and I've done the mock, like I know how you're kind of evaluating how you're looking at these resumes, but maybe you kind of just are in your mind grouping all the mid-majors together. You wait to see who wins the conference tournaments. And then you go from there instead of like really looking at those resumes and being like, should this be a 15 or are they more like a 12? Because yeah. That's where it looks more dramatic that it's a 15 over a two instead of a 12-5. Because yeah. Some of those teams are maybe right. A little bit misseeded.
Yeah, the mid-major battle for respect is it's a tale as old as time as well. Just each program kind of has to go through this, and Loyola's going through it now. Where I mean, Gonzaga, we're talking about disrespect to mid-majors. Meanwhile, Gonzaga is a tiny school in Eastern Washington that like nobody in their right mind, like Gonzaga could have lost like probably two or three games this year and we'd still have them as a one seed, because we're like, yeah, it's Gonzaga, Mark Few, like look at the talent they have out there.
It's weird that they're not even like, there was like no, they're in the Sweet 16, there was no fanfare.
Yeah,
it's just totally yeah,
it's just,
expected.
It's just kind of it's totally expected. And I mean, think about the arc of Gonzaga and how they had to fight to get like a higher seed. And same with Wichita State, like they beat Gonzaga and as an 8 seed, and then suddenly, or I think they were 9 seed that year in 2013. And then suddenly, like people start kind of turning on Wichita State and being like, oh, so Wichita State, like when Wichita State's good, they could be like really good. So we should probably take them more seriously. So I guess like on one hand, it's like, you know, we should probably see this coming more often and give Loyola more respect. But on the other hand, like this is how it's kind of worked forever. And it's kind of, that's how it works in college football too, it seems, you know, like it's not so much about this season. If you go undefeated, like Coastal Carolina, you went undefeated or whatever, you had that great season. Cool. Now do it again next year, do it again the year after that. And then maybe we'll consider putting you in the playoff. Maybe. That's kind of how it works with the seeding of the tournament, is that like, yeah. If Loyola has a great year next year, 2 years, 3 years from now, I guarantee you they're going to get more respect than they have in these past. But that's kind of, you have to earn it year by year. And I don't like that that's how it works, but it seems to be how it works.
Yeah. Instead of, it's supposed to be this year, names don't matter, yeah. Brand names, you know, this is that's exactly what it is. And Gonzaga, even this year, if they have this season, they have these insane efficiency numbers, insane players. You're not a one seed if you don't have the track record of, you right. know, 20 years right. of what Gonzaga is. And I think that's what's cool. And I think that's why, like, there's a lot of coaches, I feel, really hyping up this Gonzaga team, A, because they love the way they play, but mm-hmm. also for whatever reason, another weird thing that we do in sports, especially college sports, is like the best coach never to win a national championship. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mark Few forever was the ultimate backhanded compliment of never even reaching the Final Four. And now it's winning a champ because he's made the title game. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people are rooting for him, A, because it's a great team. People genuinely think it's his best team ever. And also, I think there's just something really cool about doing it at a place like Gonzaga and not ever going bigger.
Yeah.
Like I've always said that I think he has the ultimate like work-life balance out of anyone in this profession. Yeah. Like he literally goes fly fishing, hangs out with his sons, hangs out outside all the time. It's part of the reason he's never left. But how many coaches would do that and just actually build Gonzaga into a power and not just jump somewhere else? And I right. sort of wonder if Porter Moser is going to take that path too, because he's such a Chicago guy. I don't know. But that's part of what's cool about it, is because it actually bucks a lot of the trends and the ways that a lot of people are wired to think like coaching careers go, or where you can actually win a national championship.
And it has to give you hope if you're a smaller school. Like I said, it's a tiny Jesuit school in Eastern Washington with no football program. And for the longest time, I mean, even now, Gonzaga has been great for how many years. I feel like most people still probably can't find Spokane on a map. And that's got to, if you're a fan or an alum of a smaller school, there's got to be some sliver of hope of like, if they can do it, maybe we could sometime. Like maybe we could just like stumble across the right coach, and Loyola might be the answer. Like Loyola might be going through right now, as you said, and Porter Moser, like we might look up in 20 years and Loyola is doing this all the time. And that's what makes college basketball especially awesome. I love college football, but you don't really get that in college football that much. You get these like stories here and there, but that can't happen in college football. You can't get a guy that goes to like Indiana State and builds like a dynasty of a football, you know, they like move their way up and they become like they're competing with Alabama for national, like that doesn't really happen. So it can turn on a dime in college basketball. In 20 years is, I mean, you just look up and a new powerhouse has popped up. So yeah, I am definitely cheering for Gonzaga, which is weird because I typically don't cheer for the team that's undefeated and dominant, and here I am. I'm like, man, I would really love to see them do this, you know?
Yeah, it was when I was filling out my bracket, it was like, oh wow, I'm gonna go with the undefeated overall number one seed. But it's like you really want them to win, you want them to do it, yeah. You want this particular group to do it. And anyone who's ever met Mark Few, you know, it's an amazing story. And yeah. You've seen, just to kind of put a bow on this, like the mid-major levels, like what happened with Butler, and yes, Brad Stevens did leave, but that school and that program jumped two different conferences based on what they did. Like there's always a payoff, and it matters a lot to these programs, and there's lasting impacts and whatever. Like we're disappointed when Butler doesn't make the tournament or loses in the first round, right? Yeah. Like all of those things
I grew up in Indy, and I go to Butler games when I was growing up. We get free tickets, and we'd walk in, and it was like a glorified high school game. And they had good teams, but like people just, they were in the Horizon League, and you know, they'd be in the middle of the standings in the Horizon League. My dad and I just love college basketball, so we just drive over and go to Butler games, and they just let you in basically at certain points, and they just be like, just promise us you'll buy concessions or something. Like we got to make some money somehow. And to see them now in the Big East, you know, and like the renovation of Hinkle was crazy. Cause yeah, when we were going, it was just like, it was just an old place. Like it was awesome. It's historic, but it was very old. And then they redid it, and they got awesome seats and cool scoreboards. And you're like, man, this is crazy. And those are the success stories of college basketball that makes college basketball awesome. Because I think people that don't follow it super closely just assume that Duke and Kentucky and Kansas and Carolina, and like, those are the ones that are competing for titles year after year after year. And that's why I celebrate when Virginia wins and Tony Bennett. Virginia is obviously not like a small plucky underdog, but they kind of had their arc as well of like, proving people that they belong and that they can do this. And Tony Bennett's trying to get over that hump. And I don't know, that's what makes the tournament awesome. And coaches are always, you say the conversation about coaches that haven't won the national title or gone to the Final Four or whatever. That seems to be how it always works, is that there's always coaches never do something until they do something, you know? And that's like, it's hilarious. And then you look up and now all of a sudden Tony, like Jay Wright, for example, Villanova, they lose their point guard, Colin Gillespie, all American caliber point guard. And I was one of the people, I mean, they lose their final two games of the season without Gillespie. And I'm like, all right, so Winthrop has lost one game all season. Winthrop's going to beat Villanova. They don't beat Villanova. Villanova's now in the Sweet 16. And now you see people like, reverse engineering it, saying, why would we ever doubt Jay Wright in March? Which, like, hearing those words out loud is insane, because 5 years ago, why would we ever trust Jay Wright in March?
Couldn't get out of the first weekend.
And it's like, you can't keep up with it. It all just, because Jay Wright could never win until suddenly he can win. And now all of a sudden, Jay Wright is the most trusted guy. Same with Jim Boeheim. It's hilarious how people are like, Syracuse sucks all season, and then the tournament comes around, they flip a switch and they're great. And I'm like, my brain's like exploding. I'm like, Syracuse for the longest time was the team that would enter the tournament like 27 wins and would choke in the tournament. That was what Syracuse basketball was. And now all of a sudden it's the exact opposite. So that's what makes it fun, I guess, is that try to keep up with
yes.
Well, and also, with all these coaches.
It also, I do like that some of this stuff is just like the general sports fan popping in, you know, this one month every year. Let's talk about Syracuse though, because I think I had them in my Sweet 16, literally just based on that fact that you just talked about, that when they are a bubble team and everyone thinks they're bad and deeply flawed, they do this.
Yeah.
And it always feels like, to simplify it, obviously, but it always feels like it comes down to the fact that the 2-3 zone that they have played for decades is unfamiliar and hard to prepare for out of conference, especially on the 2-day turnaround, the tournament. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Buddy Boeheim is going off, like there's other reasons that they've won these games, but why do you think they do this, and why is it when they are not very good?
It's when they're not good. That's
the part that's confusing.
I think it might be, there might be something to it that they got nothing to lose. And what the hell? I mean, the 2-3 zone, this isn't an original observation. It's been called the knuckleball of college basketball. When you get in a tournament setting, all of a sudden you have to look up as another, the other teams look at, because it's not just that Syracuse runs a 2-3 zone. It's that they have the personnel. Like, obviously Jim Boeheim is recruiting guys who have very long arms and are very lanky and can be very disruptive. So it's not like, even if you think you're prepared for a 2-3 zone, there are other teams that run through. Michigan throws a 2-3 zone out there every so often, and Iowa ran 2-3 zone. So even if you're a team that's like, yeah, we've seen 2-3 zone, that's not like, come on, I've been playing against 2-3 zones my whole life and junior high and high school. Like, who cares? I'm not scared of this. Syracuse is always a different caliber, and they've always got the longer arms and athletes. And there's definitely something to it, but I maybe that's what it is like the double digit. When Syracuse is a higher seed, they lose an edge or something. Like, I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out myself. Like, why they're so successful when they're an 11 seed or a 10 seed. It really is baffling, because I swear to God, I would trust Syracuse more as a 10 seed at this point than like a 2 seed.
Yes. Same.
I think I would trust them more.
Same. And, yeah. And that's like essentially getting the same draw, but like, yeah, I've covered so many tournaments where Syracuse was at my site. So A, I was watching some very ugly basketball games, but B, like, these other teams would talk about, like, I remember the Cody Zeller team, like, they would talk about like using brooms or something to like simulate the length, and they just couldn't do it. It was the most bizarre thing. And so I kind of love that at least there's that semblance of normalcy with all the upsets, you know. It's like, okay, yeah, whew, all right, Syracuse is an 11 seed. Like, this is normal. This is normal for us. Another thing that is not normal is the Big Ten's showing. And this is also another thing that happens this time of year in a win and go home format. People love to make sweeping conversations and judgments about everything. This year, there was very limited non-conference play. So it is fair to talk about like how conferences were evaluated compared to each other, because some of the metrics were just a little bit off when you don't have all those early season tournaments. So I'll just put it this way though. Was the Big Ten overrated?
I think it was, and not just, I don't think it was overrated just because of what's happening in the tournament. I was scared of this. This isn't me patting myself on the back. I didn't call this per se, but this was my fear, and I voiced it a handful of times that there was a Big Ten bubble that what stood out to me is Ohio State losing 4 in a row down the stretch and still being ranked in the top 10. And I was like, my brain is just going to like some Pac-12 team loses 4 in a row. They're not going to be ranked for the next 5 seasons if you lose 4 in a row as a fact. And I'm like, how is Ohio State? Like, I thought we were still a good team. But it was baffling to me how they were still in the top 10. And, I started to worry, because I started sussing out like the best non-conference wins that the Big Ten had. And I was like, this whole perception was based on dominating the ACC Big Ten Challenge, which was won like 7-5, I think. But it, like, the Big Ten seemed to win like the marquee games. Iowa beat North Carolina, and we didn't realize North Carolina wasn't that great at the time. And Illinois hands it to Duke in Cameron Indoor Stadium. And that kind of happened. You're like, whoa, the Big Ten is really, really good this year. And then you go to conference play and you start beating up on each other, and every conference beats up on each other. That's how it works. You know, like when it happens in the Pac-12, though, we say all these teams are bad. You know, when California beats Colorado, you're like, oh my God, Colorado's not as good as I thought they were. They must suck. When Michigan State, who's not that good, starts knocking off top 5 teams, you're like, wow, Michigan State must, you know, like, it's a different conversation with the Big Ten. I started to notice that, and I was like, man, I hope this doesn't come back to bite us. I didn't think it'd be this bad, though. I didn't think we were this overrated.
No, me either. Yeah. I'm shocked that it's one team in the
season. That's insane. That is insane. Yeah,
shocking. Like, I remember being like a little concerned about Illinois region because of Loyola, because of Oklahoma State. Like, there were just some, I thought it was maybe the most challenging one, but I still thought they'd be in the Sweet 16. I thought they would reach the Final Four from it. I just thought they would have the hardest path to do so. I didn't really trust Iowa that much, but I trusted Ohio State. I mean, there were just there were so many actual Final Four contenders. That's what's shocking about only getting one team through the Sweet 16.
I guess now that you look back, hindsight's always 20/20, but now that you look at, especially Ohio State, Illinois, and Iowa, because those are the top seeds, you look at their losses and they make total sense. Like I said, like I think you replay. I'd like to think that Ohio State would be Oral Roberts if you replay it, but Oral Roberts checked a lot of boxes for what would cause Ohio State problems. Like the Buckeyes don't play defense. And Oral Roberts could score. And that's I knew it was going to be a track meet. I knew it actually ended up being far lower scoring than I anticipated. But Oral Roberts was a team there were a handful of people that knew a lot about Oral Roberts that were texting me like, hey, FYI, they might give you guys a problem. And I was like, all right, well.
Yeah, of all the 15s to draw, you get the one that played, you know, Arkansas and Oklahoma State and all these and played them well, right? So,
And there's that. Loyola is a bad matchup for Illinois because part of what made Illinois so good, I know Io got all the headlines and was the player of the year candidate, but I felt like Kofi Coburn was the difference for Illinois down the stretch. Like he became just on a completely different level down the stretch for Illinois and made them so good. And you got Krutwig, who is unlike some of the big guys that Coburn's been guarding. He's so unique, and Coburn is getting his success against Luka Garza's and Hunter Dickinson's, like traditional big guys that he can just like body up and be physical with them. And then all of a sudden Krutwig's like stepping out and doing point forward, throwing backdoor passes and shooting floaters over him and just putting them in circles. And Kofi played pretty well offensively, I felt like, in that game. But Krutwig had him just run around and he had no idea what to do defensively. And that kind of exposed Illinois' weaknesses there. And Oregon and Iowa, meanwhile, like Oregon is a nightmare matchup for Iowa. I think they play that game 10 times. Oregon's winning 8. You know, like that's not to say Iowa's not a good team. It's just – Iowa is so good offensively, as we know, and it's so hard to match that for so many teams. But Oregon is a team that's like, we can definitely match that. And on top of that, we're more athletic than you. And the one advantage Iowa had was Luka Garza. And I think Oregon was willing to cede that advantage and say, all right, Luka, go score 36 points. You're not gonna be able to stop. No one else is gonna do anything for you guys.
Right. You can't get 80 by yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're gonna score at will on the other end. And that's that is a likely explanation as well. It's like these were just bad matchups, which is a very convenient excuse, I know. But
you mentioned the athletes. Like one of the talking points is the athleticism, is the talent level.
Yeah.
Is that part of it too? Because maybe Oregon's a great example of this. Maybe not every matchup that they lost was, but yeah, I mean, like one of the things we talked about with Ohio State all year was like, okay, maybe the sum of their parts is greater than their individual talent, right? Like they just kind of were playing above it. But I don't know that I felt that across the board. Like, I think there's really talented players in the Big Ten. I think they're getting kind of grouped together as like the way that people talk about Big Ten football players as like slow and unathletic, even when that changes. Is that a fair part of this, like, broad strokes people are making?
I think it is if you really look at, like, the stars of college basketball this season. And I know Luka Garza is great, and I know I would assume, like, that became, like, the National Player of the Year race. But as a whole in the conference, like the idea of Michigan wins the regular season Big Ten title. Michigan is now the one Big Ten team left. If you were to put any of these Michigan players, that's not to say Michigan doesn't have great individual talent. Franz Wagner is going to be awesome in the NBA, I think. And Dickinson's obviously one of the better big men, but at the same time, like none of those, Michigan doesn't have an All-American caliber type guy. Like Hunter Dickinson is good. He's good. Like, we should celebrate what he is, but like, let's not pretend that he's as good as Evan Mobley at USC, say. He's not that level. So, that's interesting to me. Like, Michigan and Ohio State are both kind of in that similar spot where like the sum of the parts are greater there's something to that. And Iowa, if you were forecasting what Iowa's loss in the NCAA tournament looked like, everyone knew that it was going to look a lot like what Oregon did to them. It was like that was what you saw coming the whole time. I mean, Jordan Bohannon is good at what he does. It's just, he's limited in a lot of ways. And that's before he had two hip surgeries or whatever it was. And now all of a sudden he's out there, like there's a different caliber of athlete that he's going against. And I think there's something to that, but I also, like, in general, I think it is kind of overblown. Just like, I don't think we need to do a postmortem. Like, what's wrong with it? Sometimes it's just teams lose games, teams win games. I don't think the conference needs to like have a summit this offseason and be like, we got to fix Big Ten basketball. What happened? I think it's just like, you know, it's a crazy tournament. Things happen. And that's the way it works out. Maybe Oral, like if Ohio State maybe beats Oral Roberts, that's the scare they needed. maybe they like destroy Florida and no one's talking about it at all. And like Ohio State gets back on track and like, maybe, I don't know. There's a million different things that could have happened that, or Loyola gets seeded, right? Illinois doesn't play Loyola. They look good in the second round. Now all of a sudden you look up, Illinois's got Oregon State, Syracuse, and Houston.
Yeah.
And their region, you're like, Illinois, I like them to the title, the Big Ten, you know?
Yeah.
There's just so many factors that, but when they start stacking up and they start going against the Big Ten, I don't blame people for saying there's something wrong here, you know? But,
yeah. I do think you're correct in diagnosing. It was probably the Buckeyes that started this narrative. So let's talk about the flip side, because I'm with you. I don't think there's like these broad, you know, generalizations to take away or the need for a summit. But when you're the Pac-12 and you suddenly have way more success than anyone thought possible, including a team that was not going to make the tournament as an at-large in Oregon State playing as well as anybody in the tournament, how do you make it a bigger deal? Like, don't you want to make this like?
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. Well, I mean, I live on the West Coast, so I would love that. That'd be great for people to use that to my advantage. To like, if people care about Pac-12 basketball, that's right in my wheelhouse. I can watch
teams in your city.
Yeah,
and in the Sweet 16.
Thank you for calling it my city, Nicole. I appreciate that.
Yes, nice. you've seen like the 4-block radius around your apartment since COVID, yeah, but. Right. Yeah, your city. And listen, the state of North Carolina has zero teams in the Sweet 16, and your city has two.
The state of Indiana, who's hosting the whole tournament, because that is where basketball was basically invented, more or less. Not actually, but that's the way people talk about it.
Where it lives.
One team in the tournament. It's where it lives, yeah. One team in the tournament gets bounced by a 13 seed? Yeah, Purdue was a 4 seed.
Yep.
So the Pac-12, so 4 teams left at this point in the Sweet 16. I shouldn't say it like that. That made it sound like four teams in the Sweet 16. They have a quarter of the Sweet 16. It's insane. The only one that's really surprising to me, though, is Oregon State. I mean, the other three make a ton of sense. USC is really, really good. Oregon is really, really good. They've been good for most of the season. UCLA has had the talent. I was really high on UCLA coming into the season. Chris Smith tearing his ACL. I didn't necessarily write them off, but I was like, they were kind of struggling in certain ways even before that happened. And it's been interesting watching a Mick Cronin team that isn't hard nosed defensively, but can also score. He's got a lot of guys that can score, and that's like bizarre. Cause the same with Bob Huggins, by the way, it was very weird. Bizarro watching like Mick Cronin and Bob Huggins team played this year. They're probably scoring in the 80s. And
usually not easy for those teams.
Yeah, and most of America is like, what the hell's going on here? But UCLA has a ton of talent. So like that isn't particularly surprising, especially you look at their draw. I mean, they beat Michigan State, BYU, and Abilene Christian. Like when you say that out loud, you're like, yeah, that's not exactly shocking that given the athletes and the scores that UCLA has that they would do that. So to me, again, we should talk about the Pac-12. I want to exalt the Pac-12. I hope next year throughout the regular season, we're not as a nation dismissive of the Pac-12. But when you look at like each individual team, I'm not really particularly surprised. I mean, USC destroying Kansas last night was surprising. Like that I thought that was going to be a good game.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that Kansas was rolled over like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the only surprise to me is Oregon State. Like that's the one that's even a little bit surprising. And if you ask Oregon State fans how this is happening, they'd be like, we have no idea. We stopped watching. We stopped watching 2 months ago. We just started watching again. We turned it on when the Pac-12 tournament started.
It was a good time to come back into it. I mean, I also love that their second round game gave us Tinkle at Hinkle, which I think Matt Norlander coined, and I love it. So I hope they keep playing there. I have not looked at where their next game is, but I did not see. So even if you're like, okay, they're hot. Like I think I picked them to win the first round game for that reason. Did not see Kate Cunningham did not play well in the NCAA tournament. And after like months of hoping we'd get to see him in the NCAA tournament, that was a little bit of a bummer. But yeah, shout out to the Pac-12, shout out to West Coast basketball, which most people ignore and sleep through and don't stay up for. Because you know, 4 Pac-12 teams and Gonzaga,
right?
We came really close to Bill Walton's 5 Pac-12 teams in the Final Four dream coming true, despite a lot of them being in the same region. So maybe we need to listen to him a little bit more before we let you go, Mark. Giving you a reset. We're just racing bad Final Four choices from the past.
Okay.
Who do you have right now? Reset.
Okay, reset. Let me look at the bracket. So Gonzaga is obvious. Yep. I think Gonzaga, I think Gonzaga handles Creighton pretty easily. Oregon on the if we're looking at just the far left side of the bracket only, I think Oregon is the biggest threat to Gonzaga. That includes everyone in the East, and everyone in the West, obviously. I think Oregon is Gonzaga's biggest threat. So I think Gonzaga can get by Creighton pretty easily. If Oregon beats USC, which USC smoked Oregon the one time they played each other this year, I don't know what that necessarily means. Sometimes that means they're going to do it again. Sometimes it means, you know, USC is going to come to this game thinking they're going to do it again, and Oregon beats them. So I do like Gonzaga to the Final Four, though, out of the West. I like Baylor out of the South, by the way. It is interesting for all the chaos that's going on. For most of the season, the theme has been Gonzaga and Baylor versus everyone else. They're both still alive. They're both looking very, very good. So we could look up here in a couple weeks and be like, oh, all that madness, that was just a fun distraction for a couple weeks.
Well,
to the title game we saw coming the whole time.
And Michigan was the team we were like, oh, maybe they're the third best team. And they're still around too.
So in the East, I think the West and South are pretty obvious if you're making picks. Not to say that it's a lock that they're going to make it, but I mean, if that's a pretty obvious pick to say Gonzaga and Baylor. I'll do the East. Michigan, Florida State's tough. I like Alabama too. Oh my God. I don't want to pick against UCLA. I will say Alabama. Alabama is a team that I mean, we saw it against Maryland. They hit 16 threes. It's easy to fall in love with teams that are making threes. And the fear is always what happens when those threes aren't falling. And I think for Alabama to have such a great defense to fall back on, it gives me a lot of confidence in Alabama moving forward. So I'll take Alabama because Michigan is winning. You're holding it down for the Big Ten, but let's be honest. There's no Michigan fan that's like feeling great about the LSU game and the Texas Southern that you're really feeling that confident. I think Michigan fans are like, we're winning. We'll take it. That's all that matters.
Yeah. I think they're pleasantly surprised by the win over LSU.
Yeah. Yeah, as long as we keep winning, I'll be happy, but no Michigan fans like, man, we're doing it this year. We're going all the way.
I think you did have that before.
Right.
Isaiah
right. Before
Livers. Yeah. That totally changed.
But what we've seen from Michigan so far, I think Michigan, by the way, I do think Michigan is good enough to win a title. Honestly. Like I think Michigan, I think their ceiling without Livers is not that much lower. It's just their margin for error has been, you know, is razor thin now. I think that's really what it is. I think that's what Livers absence does in them. So give me Alabama and then the Midwest. Ooh, I do not like Houston. I got to say, not a Houston fan at all. This is a crapshoot. This one's tough because no matter who you pick against, everyone's going to get mad. You're going to be like, people have been picking against us all year. Us shock the world. I think Loyola, honestly. I mean, Loyola, what they did to Illinois, they look like the better team. That did not look like an upset at all. And I have to believe that Loyola, I mean, they made the Final Four as a Cinderella, as everyone's noticing now. This is not a Cinderella team. This is a team that's very, very good. If you put a 4 or a 3 next to Loyola's name and pretended like they were a 3 seed, no one would bat an eye. So I'm going to pretend that. I'm going to pretend like Loyola is like a 3 seed, and I'm going to pick them to go to the Final Four out of the Midwest. So there you have it. Okay, Baylor, Loyola, Gonzaga, Alabama.
Okay, so you stole all the ones that I was going to say. However,
oh, really?
Yeah, well, I had Alabama prior to the weekend, so I was going to keep them. But I will say that there's a couple teams that I flirted with before picking those teams, which was Arkansas looks really good.
Arkansas looks really hot.
Florida State has been a prop. Like I could see Florida State possibly beating Michigan in this next round, just because it's like a very vintage Leonard Hamilton Florida State team. And I also kind of love Oregon State, but I also love Loyola more. So those are my like borderline teams, but I'm with you. And again, it's thank God for what is it? The Midwest, because otherwise it's fairly chalky for talking about ones and twos. But I do think to your earlier point, I think that the conversation about Gonzaga and Baylor was correct. Like there were two elite teams this year and then it was all over the map. And even the teams like a Texas that like we thought we bought into by the end, like you really didn't know what you were going to get. So we'll see how it plays out. So Sweet 16 coming up next weekend, keep track of what days things are because I did get confused and missed half of a basketball game on Monday because I did not realize they were still playing. So Mark, on this podcast, before you go, we have to do a last call and it's called Power Hour. So we're sticking with the theme. For those who are listening, who haven't heard it before, it's like what you would cheers to at 2 a.m. at last call at a bar, or something you're very angry about and just it kind of boils over at last call. So it's, you know, it's a rant or a cheers. I will let you go first.
Yeah, I just want to rant about Gonzaga, the narrative around Gonzaga. Hopefully they can be put to bed once and for all, because as someone who covers college basketball for a living, I still get far too many people that say that Gonzaga chokes in March. And it's like, it's gotten to the point I used to fight it, and now I don't even fight anymore, because it's like you're saying the sky is purple. Like it's like there's no basis in reality, even a little bit. It's mind blowing how this exists still. Six straight Sweet 16s. This idea that they choke in March is basically, from my perspective, it hinges on a couple of things. It's Adam Morrison losing to UCLA in 2006. That's a vivid memory that people have, that they were beating UCLA. They let it slip away. He starts crying, and that sticks with people.
15 years ago now, by the way.
15 years ago. By the way, you might remember, everyone remembers the image of Adam Morrison wearing his blue jersey as he was crying. You know why he was wearing his blue jersey, Nicole? Because UCLA was not the higher seed in that game. That was going to be an upset, or Gonzaga was not the higher seed. UCLA was the higher seed. Gonzaga was a 3 seed. UCLA was a 2 seed. Sure, they kind of choked the game away, but it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like they were a 1 seed that lost to a 13 or something. And some, you know, so there was that. Then in 2013, when Gonzaga's a 1 seed, Wichita State beats them. And at the time, everyone's like, oh my God, these frauds. We finally give Gonzaga a 1 seed, and they lose in the second round. Get them out of here. And then, like, look at the arc of what Wichita, first of all, Wichita State goes on to the Final Four. And then, like, what Wichita State's program becomes. I mean, you look back on that, sure, they should have won the game. Like, it's fair. I'm not saying don't criticize them, but, like, I mean, is that really that egregious when you look back on that loss? And then finally, it's like there's the reason Gonzaga gets labeled as choking is because they've never won a national title. And in 2017, as a reminder, they were 2 minutes away from winning a national title, which is not winning a national title. I understand that, but I think it's pretty clear if you can get within 2 minutes of winning one, the program is capable of winning one. They're probably going to win one this year. And my whole point is that, please, for the love of God, I'm begging everybody, like, you're making yourself look stupid at this point. It's no longer like, I don't even want to argue with anybody anymore, because it's not even worth arguing about. But I don't know I hope that this is something that we can finally end once and for all. And I'm sure Gonzaga has to win the title for people to do it. So I'm yelling into the wind, I know, but for God's sakes, they do not choke in March. They're, in fact, it's the exact opposite. They're one of the most successful programs.
Yes,
in March,
very consistent. And the narrative that they, like, oh, we're going to be worried about them because they haven't played anyone in 2 months. Also gone, because they
also
made six straight.
They do it every time. Every time.
They have been fine with that. They figured it out.
It's ridiculous.
Okay. My last call is also a rant, but also couched with a compliment, because I loved that this year's tournament got to play in campus sites. Like, I love that Hinkle and Assembly Hall and Mackey Arena were hosting. However, it didn't feel as great because they do the stupid thing where they replace all the courts and they make them all look the same. And I don't know who had that brilliant idea at some point in this process, but go back to it. Like, it's so much easier to tell what region you're in and, like, what's happening in that particular arena. Like, if there's one place that's having a lot of upsets, whatever it is, it's just a lot easier when you're flipping back and forth to keep track of who's playing when you're flipping around. But also it strips away a lot of the personality, even if you're playing in a pro arena, even if you're playing at Lucas Oil or whatever, like, it stripped away some of the Hinkle magic. And it could still feel that you were at Hinkle, but it didn't look like it. I don't know why they did this. I want them to go back to having the real courts.
Right. There's got to be a middle ground somewhere, because I do get sort of, you want to say you want to have a March Madness feel to it as well. And it's not like a regular season game that you're just
watching. Can you put something just like around the edges or something?
Yeah, just like leave the baseline logos, or it says Bulldogs or Butler on the baseline or something, or leave, there's gotta be something you can leave. Cause I'm with you. It's awesome. Look at, like, I remember, I think we talked about this before, that I vividly remember 1995 when Tyus Edney hit the shot to beat Missouri. I remember that that game was in Boise, Idaho. And the reason I remember that is because I've seen that highlight so many times that I've seen the orange and blue court and the big Bronco on the court and the outline of Idaho. And it's so cool to like know that. And for a guy who loves trivia, it makes it easy for me because I can remember where these games are being played and all that. And it might affect like my feelings on the game. If I would have known that Ohio State was playing in Mackey Arena, boy, I would have been more worried about Oral Roberts. I'm telling you, because Ohio State, that's a house of horrors, Mackey Arena for Ohio State. So, I'm with you. It is bizarre, and it's weird, especially when it's all taking place in Indianapolis, and you turn on the TV, and like the one sideline you can read just says Indianapolis, and it's we know it's in Indianapolis. They're all in Indianapolis.
Yeah,
I want to know what arena you're playing in, not what city. Yeah,
and especially because you had on-campus arenas, which was really cool.
Yeah,
and let them be. Just let them have that character. So that's my plea to the NCAA selection committee, all the deciding people, is if you're going to make us continue to play in football stadiums, continue to have Final Fours there, please just give us the original courts for some of the earlier rounds. Oh, and stay on campuses. Like, let Hinkle host again.
Yes.
That was great.
Yes, it was awesome. Yeah, so, the sun shining through on Hinkle, there's nothing like it.
Nothing it's like so it. Cool. Truly so cool. The best. And Butler Blue gets to be the mayor of March, my close personal friend. Just amazing. Amazing. Well, Mark, thank you so much for coming by, hanging out, talking all things Sweet 16. If you want to tell people where they can find all of your various...
Yeah, absolutely. So we're doing, first of all, Titus and Tate podcast. We're doing podcasts all throughout March Madness, breaking down all the fun and laughing at how stupid all of our picks are and all that kind of stuff. We have a lot of fun doing that. We're also doing live streams on YouTube, which has become more fun for me than I thought it would be, where we're watching all the games. And then when we go to record the podcast, we work for Fox Sports. So they're just like, we have a ton of cameras. Let's just turn them on. And we're doing live streams. So it's become a fun, like late night thing for us. So every night after NCAA tournament games, we'll go live and we'll talk about the games that are happening. So if you're into that, you can watch us on YouTube and, you don't have to listen to the show. Or if you just want to listen to the podcast, you can do that. Also, I want to plug, I'm doing work with the, 3x3U. I'm going to be like the sideline report. I do like the players lounge deal. So 3x3U, for those that don't know, is, they do a 3-on-3 tournament at the Final Four every year with like guys that basically didn't make the Final Four. And, my role in the operation is I hand them stacks of cash and they get to throw it in the air, and it's a whole spectacle. It's ridiculous. It's actually a ton of fun to watch. I think most people hear three on three and they think of like their Gus Macker tournaments when they were growing up, and it's like a bunch of old men just, you know, but it's actually a ton of fun. And it's basically just dunks and threes, just all the, it's fast paced. It's a ton of fun. But anyway, my role in it is I hand out money. So I love doing it. And, I encourage people to watch that because it is a ton of fun to watch during Final Four week and as you're waiting for the Final Four game. So be sure to check that out too. That's it. That's about all I got going on.
Well, and our Power Hour listeners did listen to Robbie Hummel talk about 3-on-3.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, Robbie will be there. Robbie does the heavy lifting. He calls the games all day.
Well, and he's our Olympian hopeful.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, and then every so often, it's hilarious because like Robbie does all the hard work, and then I just hand the players the money. And by the end of the event, the players love me, and they like if we all went out like after the event's over, they'd all want to like hang out with me instead of Robbie because like I'm the
money guy.
Like Pavlov's dogs, honestly. It's like I'm the guy that hands you money. So like they just follow me around. They're like, you got any more of that money?
Yeah, I mean, they probably expect you to buy the drinks and all the things. You're the money guy.
So anyway.
So yeah, be sure to check all of that out and follow Mark's work over at Fox Sports. Thank you for listening. Power Hour will be back next Tuesday. Andy Staples, Ari Wasserman, the whole crew will be around on this feed the rest of the week. But we will see you next Tuesday. Thank you for listening.